KUER's Whitney Evans talks to several outgoing Salt Lake City Council members about where they see the city going. Dan Bomas explores the unusually heated municipal races in the town of Mount Pleasant. And Governor Herbert calls on the Utah National Guard to help fight several wildfires in the state. You're listening to the KUER News Pod for Monday, August 12th. I'm Brian Grimmett. Several Salt Lake City Council seats are up for grabs this year, and three council members are retiring. Primary election day is this Tuesday. KUER's Whitney Evans spoke to outgoing council members to see what they think are the top issues in their districts as new faces compete for their seats.
Councilman Carlton Christensen has represented much of Salt Lake City's Northwest Quadrant for 16 years. District 1 includes areas like Rose Park, Jordan Meadows, and the Salt Lake International Airport. Christensen says in recent years, crime is down and home prices are up. The Salt Lake City Council set aside money this year to focus on commercial development in the area, which Christensen says is an ongoing struggle.
The hardest part about it is we're kind of the edge of a bunch of different kind of market circles, and so we're kind of a captive audience.
Councilwoman Jill Remington Love has represented District 5 for 12 years. That includes neighborhoods east, south, and west of Liberty Park. Three candidates are on the primary ballot for her seat. Love is proud of thriving business areas in her district, including 9th and 9th and 15th and 15th, but she says her constituents have mixed feelings about new bike lanes going into neighborhoods, and tension still exists between preservation and property rights.
Is the house the right size for the lot? Does it fit in with the character of the neighborhood? If you're not in a historic district or not using some of these new tools that we've put in place, there's still a lot of concern that these houses are too big for the lots.
Councilman Soren Simonson has represented District 7 in Salt Lake City for 8 years. His district includes Sugar House, east to about Foothill Drive. Five candidates are running for his seat. The area has seen a number of private and public investments over the past few years, including several new condos and retail stores, but eyes have more recently turned to the Sugar House streetcar line. Simonson says while the council decided where the line will go, it will be in part up to his successor to determine how to pay for it.
The city continues to look at federal funding opportunities. Federal money only provides a portion of the funding, and coming up with the local match, I think that will be a really huge challenge.
In District 3, which includes most of the avenues and Capitol Hill, Councilman Stan Penfold is up for re-election. He's facing two challengers. The primary election will narrow candidates down to two for each district. The general election is November 5th. Whitney Evans, KUER News.
From KUER News in Salt Lake City, I'm Terry Gilday. Cities and towns across Utah, from Big Water to Smithfield, are holding primary elections tomorrow, narrowing the field of candidates for mayor and city council positions. There's one town in Sanpete County where the mayoral primary has drawn intense interest this year. KUER's Dan Bomas reports.
About 100 people gathered in the Wasatch Academy Gymnasium in Mount Pleasant for a Meet the Candidates night on July 31st. It was another indication of the intense interest in this year's municipal election, something this town of 2,800 hasn't always shown in the past. 2 years ago, Jeff McDonald joined the five-member city council because he was the only candidate in the race.
And I just decided I would give it my best shot and see if I could win even as a write-in. And then not long after I had signed up, Mr. Reed Thomas stepped down and nobody else had signed up, so I was able to get on city council without going through an election.
McDonald immediately began trying to reshape city government with ideas others on the council seemed unwilling to hear. He challenged what would normally have been routine city spending. He demanded investigations of other elected officials. Now he's decided to run for mayor, hoping that office will give him a better opportunity to get his agenda considered. But a couple of city staffers got so frustrated with McDonald, they sent an email complaining about him to the publisher of the Sanpete Messenger, a weekly newspaper based in Manti. On April 24th, publisher Suzanne Dean responded with an opinion column urging more candidates to run for office and more voters to get involved.
My basic point was that middle of the road pillars of the community do not stand up and run for local office, you're going to be left with people like McDonald who were kind of out there on what I view to be the edge.
The column criticized what Dean called McDonald's obstructionism, something he says makes no sense.
To me, an obstructionist stops things. I haven't been able to stop anything. I've been a no vote on some issues, but every single thing that they have wanted to get through has got through because I've been the only no vote if that's happened.
Dean's column touched off a furious debate in the community. The newspaper printed a lengthy response from McDonald, dozens of letters from both supporters and detractors, and when the filing deadline arrived, 11 candidates had declared their intention to run for office in Mount Pleasant, 3 for mayor and 8 for 2 positions on the city council. Dan Simons, a former city council member, is running for mayor. He's retiring from his job as postmaster in Spring City, and he says he'll be able to devote his full time to what is normally a part-time job. Dave Blackham is also running for mayor. He's a former city council member and the owner of the Skyline Pharmacy right in the center of town. He says others in city government have found McDonald difficult to work with.
It's like this. If you work, let's say, in your office, and you have someone that's hired that you cannot fire, okay? And everything that is done, he challenges. Everything that is done, he questions. How long before your entire office pulls away from that person?
McDonald, though, is not alone. Some of the candidates running for the city council agree with his agenda, which may have as much to do with national politics as local issues. Vern Akau-Ola told folks at the candidate forum he believes the city has some of the same problems as the federal government.
One of my main reasons for running is I feel right now our country's headed in the wrong direction. We're loaded with debt. And I think a lot of the problems are, as some of the candidates have stated, for grants and things. Grants have not been the answer.
Mount Pleasant has received millions of dollars in grants from federal and state government as well as private donors in recent years, using the money for everything from renovating City Hall to building a rodeo arena. Many of the applications were engineered by City Council member Mont Bona, who is not up for re-election this time. He says local tax revenue doesn't come close to addressing the city's needs.
I think the reality will set in, and they'll realize that the money has to come from somewhere, especially with this aging infrastructure that's got to be addressed. And they'll have to sit down and figure out how to do it.
The city's nuisance ordinance may be as much an issue for candidates in Mount Pleasant as any dispute over spending. A lot of people got mad a few years ago when letters went out from the city to some property owners telling them to clean up junk cars and mow their weeds. Mayoral candidate Jeff McDonald says they've asked him to push for a change.
I tried to get him to review this ordinance and relook at it and see if we can make it a little bit more community friendly instead of I don't know the right word for that. It was just really hard-nosed ordinance for a country community.
McDonald's opponent, Dave Blackham, can see the argument from those who think the city is infringing on private property rights, but he says there's more to it.
When some of that goes beyond and you have a situation where it compromises public safety, you can't allow that. If with respect to other people's property and potentials for fires, if they don't take care of their weeds and that kind of thing. So you got to strike a balance.
Whatever the motivations of those running for office in Mount Pleasant this year, it's clear no one will win by default. Suzanne Dean, the publisher of the St. Pete Messenger, won't take all the credit for the full slate of candidates, but she does think her paper made a difference.
A community newspaper does have some influence, especially if there's a situation that people aren't informed about. I think that the brouhaha growing out of my original publisher's perspective did motivate some people to get involved, people across the opinion spectrum.
But the job takes a toll. After 12 years publishing this 120-year-old newspaper, Dean says she's looking for an opportunity to retire. Dan Bomas, KUER News.
A wildfire on the Utah-Idaho border has grown to more than 25 square miles. Governor Gary Herbert called out Utah National Guard helicopter crews over the weekend to help fight it. The fire is burning about a mile south of the town of Samaria, Idaho, but there have been no evacuations. It was about 38% contained on Sunday morning. Another fire has burned about 3,000 acres on the Skull Valley Goshute Reservation near Dugway, and there's a fire burning east of Hiram, Utah, that's covered just under 2,000 acres.
Employees at Hill Air Force Base have found themselves waiting in long lines to get to work, thanks in part to the sequester affecting defense spending. The base has reduced hours for personnel at several entrances, but it says it's able to keep the traffic flowing. 10,000 cars pass through the gates at Hill during some peak hours. A federal court jury has determined that Ogden Regional Medical Center retaliated against an employee who complained about discrimination, but it found the hospital was not guilty of discrimination in the first place. The jury determined Raymond Zisumbo was entitled to $7,500 in compensatory damages, though his attorney says he'll seek $200,000 in back pay. Zisumbo is Latino. He was a computer tomography technician who served as an interim department head and complained of discrimination when he wasn't promoted. He was fired a short time later. The Utah County Board of Health is considering new regulations for trampoline parks, citing a growing number of injuries. California is also considering new rules for the parks, where patrons flip and twist in the air as they bounce. Trauma staff at the hospital say they saw 52 injuries requiring multiple doctor visits from area jump gyms from May 2011 to November 2012, according to their emergency room records. Most of the patients are young men. The manager of one trampoline business in Provo says the rate of serious injuries in her industry is lower than in many organized sports, and she worries where the increased regulation of her business might be going. And finally, about $14,000 in school fees paid by students and their parents at Granger High School were stolen from the principal's car before he could take the money to the bank. Murray police say this happened on July 31st. Principal Jerry Haslam had left the money in his car overnight, intending to take it to the bank in the morning. About $6,000 was in cash. The rest was in checks. Granite District policy requires deposits to be taken directly to the bank, and Granite School District says Haslam is facing discipline, but he still has his job. And that is your KUER News Pod for Monday, August 12th. For the latest news and updates from around the state, visit us online at KUER.org or follow us on Twitter at KUER News. Until next time, I'm Brian Grimmett.